Okay, welcome everyone for the weekly discussion in English medium. We have already appointed Sutta Nipata Purabheda Sutta. Before going to the appointed Sutta, if anyone is having any other open questions or any suggestions or any topics or interview reports, we will listen to it. And then we supposed to go to appointed discussion. I'm inviting if there are any other topic or interview reports.
Avasarai Bante, we have not received any reports for today's session, Bante. Avasarai.
Okay, that suggests that we can directly go into the appointed topic. Yes? Yes. We have a question, we have a report.
Theravan Saranai, Swami Mahansa. I wanted to just touch upon a theme that you spoke about a couple of weeks back, and it was particularly, as I recall, remembering your definition of kusala and the commitment to always thinking about doing better. And I was wondering, what are the pillars of the steps to cultivating kusala? And what are the factors that we can utilize to measure and benchmark that we are progressing? I had joked with Bhante, I had this brief conversation, and I was saying the commitment to try to be better 1% every day. And he did, he kind of joked and said humbly, maybe you should think annually. So
think about?
Instead of being 1% better, be a little bit more realistic and think about how you can be better at maybe 1% once a year.
Yeah. So that as far as the pillars are concerned, as far as the benchmarks are concerned, Sila Sikha, Samadhi Sikha, Panya Sikha. The Buddha has given restraint regarding the morality, restraint regarding the concentration, and restraint regarding the wisdom. They have three towns, three tastes, three kind of how do you call vibrations? Yes. So moral siksha is about the morality, social life, ethics. So if you are having ethical question, you can never get a peace of mind. So at any cost, you must not disturb the fellow beings. So there you must be better. You must understand each and everyone. If I have disturbed you, please forgive me. And please let me know, how can I not to disturb you? Not in the good and not in the bad. Not to disturb others. It's a crime. Today civilization is a crime. Today language is a crime. Today monetary system is a crime. Today jurisdictional system is a crime. They're always disturbing and they are forking fingers into others. But unlucky enough, we are born with that and we are cultured with that. So still we are surviving. So you must be thankful to the society, thankful to the nature, everything. But we must understand, never fork fingers to other psychology. At any cost, unless otherwise someone come and offer you, please say, I'm sorry, I don't have time, but anyway, okay, you tell me. No otherwise. So that means no politics, no economic, no social. So morality is that. And once you imagine that we people, some or the other, manage to it, we don't care about the parents, children, and the movable and non-movable properties, and we are depending on someone given cooked food, someone given prepared houses, someone prepared medicine thanks to the Buddha. And now, how quickly we shut our mouth up, how quickly we become inactive and just keep the body by what you call parasympathetic nervous system, not touch the sympathetic nervous system. That is samatha. That is what you call concentration meditation. Whatever the parasympathetic work happened, it is beyond your control. The heart is beating, hair growing, teeth growing, everything happening, it is none of your business. But we are foolish enough, we are concerned about that also. How is your heart rate? How is your blood pressure? How is your sugar situation? Shit. They are parasympathetic things. You can be aware. But you can be aware not to worry. That is called Panya Sikha. Beyond concentration. Concentration with the sympathetic nervous system. Shut your mouth up in simple. Shut up. I would say, be mindful and mind your own business. But even then you have to accept there are parasympathetic things, even in the animals, even in the beings and kind of thing. How can I be imperturbable? With the way that in front of him, I get nervous. So what to do? In front of a girl, I get some romantic feeling. What to do? And what that girl can do? And when the two fighting, I get tension. So there's parasympathetic. So you have to understand, are you also getting tired and frustration and tension? Yes, yes. Then we are both human. Well and good. That is called wisdom training. So day by day we are learning how to be better. So we have to live in the society, but not touched by the social norms, but not to violate them. And then not to violate parasympathetic nervous system and skeleton-related muscles. Just relax. Even if you are working, you can be relaxed, just like playing and musical instrument. And later you have to understand parasympathetic works are happening. It is pre-decided. What the hell? Why you are worrying about that? So these are the three pillars. And they are a tremendous task. Not a single person excused. Each and everyone you learn is your genuine, intrinsic, your learning. No one can share with you because you are learning by your own common sense. So Buddha is just telling you the directions and your co-meditator also will give you the directions, but you have to select. But don't rush, I mean. Why should we rush? Because we have, throughout the sansara, we have been utter fools. And doing all the bad things, at one shot, we can't pull everything, all our bad things with the help of a bulldozer, never. Never. And if it is happening, you will break your psychiatric balance. So you have to do it slowly, mindfully, silently. That is my way of interpretation. You have anything to say, French?
Yes, it's Kassapa, Samana Kassapa from France. So regarding the theme of restraint, we talked about it last time. For example, in our case, living in a monastery, not being aware of what is outside, when people tend to think that actually we don't care. We have no heart. We just in our huts practicing meditation. We don't care. So how, Bente, how do you answer to these kind of statements? Because you have the chance to meet some politicians, some people in both society, and they must think sometime, oh, why Bente is coming to give us some advice because he's living in the forest. In the West, it's especially true. If you don't get involved, people think, oh, you don't care. So how Bente managed to answer this kind of question and to explain?
According to the theoretical way, this is upekkha, indifference, you don't care. Two types of okay. One thing is with utterly blessed with ignorance, ajnana upekkha. Other one is everything he knows, he is very alert and he is very diligent, but not moving the body, not uttering words. And the mind is calm and quiet. So these two that do not know, therefore you are not inaction. But other person utterly knows, but is restrained not to get perturbed, unperturbable. So out of these things, the Zen Buddhism, Karate, Judo, everything is learned. He is fully aware, but he is not fighting. Unless otherwise defense happens. So, but before that, he is fully trained. Like animals and how to sting like a bee and move like a butterfly. Cassius Clay. But you never attack someone unless he is asking for that. He says, please, don't disturb me. I am telling you second time, please don't disturb me. Third time, whack the fellow, one shot knockout. So that is how Pandita Sayadaw is Burma. He's such a nice person. You know, he's full of energy, By looking at, you can see it's full of energy, but he never invites someone to do something, or but provoking someone. But you can provoke, but you have to be careful. He give one first signal, second signal, third signal, back the fellow. So I like it so much. And when Jnanarama is from here, he never listened to this kind of thing, but he is aware of everything. He said, don't talk this thing with me. I'm a forest monk. Don't go outside. Don't have children, the new monks. Don't go sermons outside. You be defensive. Upanishad side is very offensive. Jnanarama is just like a tusker in the forest. When Upanishad side is a lion. He's in the center, in the capital city. So when you look at these things, unlucky enough, he also has seen Pandita Sayadaw, so I can't lie too much. He has been there. But he has never seen Jnanarama. So I find that two extremes. So after the Jnanarama's demise, I just wanted to be under a Zen master. I want to get the fact. So when the Venerable Guttasila told, if you go to Pandita Rama, go prepared for crying. He don't care, whoever you may be, but he gets the full treatment. Unbearable. Many people cry, thinking that we come all the way from countries and go to him. He don't care, you are just a vegetable for him. So, this is a dramatic way of life and this is a passive way of life. So, my type is more to the dramatic side. So, all my teachers disheartened with me. Because I am such an unpredictable culprit. Unpredictable. Even I can't say that what I am going to do next. Some people come and ask, Bhante, can I meet you to that day? I don't know. Because things are getting so disappointed and changing timetable. I don't keep my timetable in my mind. I mean, there are some diary notes. But I don't know. And I like a free bird. I am happy. But I am keeping a timetable daily. And I try it on Thursday, I am preparing for this discussion. I don't ignore it. One before that, a single discussion. And tomorrow, interviews. Day after, a sermon. So whole world knows. But I don't take care. I don't worry. I won't worry. So likewise, these two available. So young age and 30s, 40s, you have the dynamic kind of equilibrium. After 60s, 80s, passive kind of thing. So, but anyway, throughout the vigilance is there. Throughout the diligence is there. I complain, you are in the passive side. Kasapa. No, you have to come out from the den. Once in a way, he is giving a good fighting with me sometimes, but he is not up to me. But anyway, we are fighting fairly enough. So we have to have a playground and fighting. It is just for the practice. I mean, special task force training. Special task force training is whack the fellow just like you are caught up into the enemy's hand, and so you are no one can punish you. Do you have any comments?
Yeah, just a few things. I wanted to go back to the meaning of this word kusala that was asked about earlier on, because it doesn't really mean better at all, and if you have this idea that kusala means better, then you're really in trouble, because it simply means like a good
skillful
action.
Skillful.
Yeah, skillful or good action or merit. It can also mean virtue, you know, like somebody is a kusala kind of person. It means he's a virtuous, a good kind of person. And also kusala can mean clever, you know, that somebody's sharp or then like kusala kamma means like a meritorious action or a skillful action or... it can also mean like right conduct, meaning skillful conduct. But, you know, so this idea of that it's better gives it an edge. You know what I mean? Like it's good, but better. You know what I mean? Like, and it's internally dissatisfying. Whereas kusala is more enough in nature and it's more wholesome in nature. So something is wholesome is intrinsically wholesome. Like you don't go and say to a baby, oh, you're a useless little fella because you're not able to do any work. You know, a baby is intrinsically wholesome, is intrinsically worthy. Like, this is more the feeling of kusala. So it's not better. Like, you don't go over to the baby and kind of go, you could be a bit better. You know, you're just sitting around all the day and doing nothing. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, I'm just showing you reductomat ad nauseum, like show you a silly, take it to an extreme and you see where this meaning falls away. So this idea of better is a toxic thing. I was listening to somebody that were talking about this idea that the pyramids were built by aliens. You see, so because it's 4,000-year-old technology or even more, and I was telling Mahatero about I went to the Louvre, you know, and the French are very good at stealing things from other countries. They were the first. They beat the English to a lot of things, and they went to Egypt. This was Napoleon's idea, and they just went in and took whole temples out. Like, it's just unbelievable. And they took out a whole room from a tomb, from a pyramid or something. And it's one of the things that even if I think about it, it still shocks me. And they put this tomb, this room, all the contents of this room in inside a glass box. And you could walk all around the glass box and look inside. And it was a bed, a simple bed, and a table, and a chair, and a book, and writing material, you know, something for writing. And I was telling Dhammajiva, the book was not intellectual. It was not philosophical. It was a trash novel, like a romance or a, like, detective. Like, it was pure for entertainment. And all of these things were 4,000 years old. And you know, we can be very hubristic these days that, oh, we're getting better every year and we're more and more fantastic. And somehow this these items that are so familiar to us are 4,000 years old. It was shocking to me. Like, I was shocked. I still am shocked if I think about it. And Dhammajiva knows I follow quite a little bit about AI, because it's a very fruitful field when you think about consciousness, and all these scientists think that they can make consciousness out of silicon and software. I think it's ridiculous, but still, I like, you know, they're always interesting. So recently they've been using AI to decode the graffiti on tombs, on these ancient sites, to try to figure out what's the graffiti saying, you know? Like, there's one of these jokes the Monty Python guys had, you know, two centurions are, they're just telling each other smutty jokes, you know, in this, like, we think that the human has somehow improved, you know, but actually, you know, even 10,000 years ago, if I met somebody who was from 10,000 years ago, I wouldn't know any difference. It's not like their head is small and they're, you know, somehow different. They're still the same people. So when I read the suttas, I don't go, ah, you know, those old people in the old times had no idea. Things are better now. No, the Buddha is brilliantly insightful. Like, and the human condition hasn't changed. I mean, okay, he didn't have cell phones, but, you know, just the insight he had into the human nature, you know, is just unbelievable and remarkable. So kusala is something that is intrinsically wholesome and beneficial and virtuous, and, you know, and it's enough. You know, it's more enough in nature than better, like not enough. You know, so like if you look at all of the advertising, it's always based around this idea of better. Like the one that really is brilliant and crazy at the same time is this this slogan one of the makeup companies has or something like that. It's like, because you're worth it. You see, this is their slogan, because you're worth it. Because really what the advertising is saying is you're not worth it. And if you put this stuff on your face, then you'll be better. You see, so it's intrinsic. It's very interesting how psychologically it's saying you're not worth it. You know, that I feel I'm not worth it. So if I put this stuff on my face, I am worth it. You know, very clever, you know. And so be very careful that your whole purpose here is to get better. You know, you are not here to get better. You are here to just sort of have enough, be enough, and be, you know, enjoy the wholesomeness. And like, again, Mahatero was saying about, we're inactive. there's nothing inactive about us sitting here. You know, there's so many things I can do. Really, I can do a lot of things if I want to, and I put my mind down to it. I can go and do it. And Madero, you have to, you know, he's always doing a lot of things. Look, we are skillful, capable, competent people. So many of the monks here are like, you know, the finest of Sri Lanka. Like, and I hear from lay people like, oh, you know, monks are kind of idiots or incapable, or, you know, they have bad astrology or something like that. You can't arrange them. You can't marry them off. Where do we put them into the temple? And not here, not here. All these monks are very capable and competent. So, you know, it's a very dynamic situation to be capable, be competent, and have kusala as enough. You know, because somebody has to go, oh, I think you could do better. You know, I think you could be doing more. And that's the ultimate poison. That's like saying, you know, because you're worth it. You know, and it's drawing people out, and then you're finished. You know, the Buddha's teaching is enough. The Buddha's teaching is kusala. We don't need to improve it too much. You know, just take it all the way down and see where it leads you, and then improve on it. Okay, fine. Take it to the limit. Break it. Fine. Try break it. You know, good luck.
So, no, the self-contradictory, what you are expressing, so self-contradictory, because you define kusala with the conventional translation.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is the way only we have available. But well, Jnanananda, considering everything, he shows better than good, it's an advertisement, it's a marketing system. Everyone is promoting to do better. That's why he is happy with AI. I don't like. AI is always, you can't do away with, because daily AI is improving. You can believe AI or you can hate AI, but AI is happening. And I am using it. He appreciates, I depreciate it. With AI is kusala. And he says some words, the kusala is always you are contented with. And that means present moment is full of kusala. I mean, here now I am. But the Buddha says, just being here now I am is not enough. You must be aware of it. You must communicate with others. Marketing is there. Without that, you are not arahant. Even you become arahant, you must market it. That's why the difference between the Buddha and Paccheka Buddha. You know, Paccheka Buddha, he is not marketing. He is fully worthy, self-contented and self-enlightened. No one care. It is like a light lamp and covering with the cup. So the Buddha is expressing, and it is marketing. It is AI. So that part, when Jnanananda and myself is contradictory, he says, just getting rid of raga, dosa, moha is enough. That is a nibbana. No. Commentator says, not enough that. You must know that you have gotten rid of. That gotten rid of knowing is better than getting rid of. It's a communication. It's a marketing. It's an advertisement. That is why the only religion, international religion, is Buddhism. Because it is with marketing. It is with spreading. It is going beyond the cultural limits. Languages was adoptable. So AI is adopting. I don't need AI. But they don't believe it, don't follow it, because it is, even if you support it or not, it's growing. So whenever you become enlightened, if you do not know, that's the difference between arahant and the child. Child is fairly, better, kusala, and no harm. Do not know. No one worship it. But we fellows done all bad thing on the world and gradually gotten rid of with the restrainment, and we know. What a urge for us to break rules, but not to break rules. You must have higher dynamism, higher restraint, and that you appreciate. You are telling, hey, you are coming from this country, you are coming from this country, we all are the same, and we are fighting, we are shouting, we are telling people, world is full of chaos, but we are not just sitting and walking, just passivity, we are shouting. Because we are monks, we are meditators. So that part, with or without, Venerable Kondanya never did any convincing of other people, and he became a first Arahant, went into the forest. Venerable Sariputta came very late, and Buddha said, hey, he is the guy. He is the one going to do, because he see. And Buddha blackguarded and found fault with Sariputta so much. But still, he knows without me, Buddha can't do it, because so much of work. And end of the day, with the Sariputta demise, Buddha says, I feel the gap I miss, but I can make up my mind. So these character difference, therefore, Kusala, we have two big the argument and writing and book writing, one thing on the paper articles, some another monk with the books, the difference between Pina, Punya, Papa, Kusala, Akusala. And Punya Papa is a worldly thing, that you have to get the heavenly life and the rich life, you have to do Punya, Ping. Kusala, Akusala is skillfulness. So skillfulness don't find fault with the better, because it's a communicate with you. It is not allowing you to rest. So it's driving you. It's a dynamism. So Venerable Analayos, when he was writing the Satipatthana, I just wanted to tell him, my mindfulness is a passive thing. You are just passive sitting. And he says, no. Upandita is different. He's dynamic. No, I told Venerable Jnanarama is telling this and that. Ultimately, he proved at the beginning, it's very dynamic. At the end, it will go to the passivity, because you are coping with the nature. And nature will take. At the beginning, you have to have this dynamism, the hooray, go. So when you are at the younger part of the age or younger part of the meditation, you have to be very dynamic and set the machine in run. Once it is smoothened and oiled, with the full harmonious, it will run. So at the beginning, it is dynamic. At the beginning, it is consuming. At the beginning, it is restrained. But towards the end, if you are correct, if you are leading, if you are improving, the autopiloting will happen. So we must not take stand telling Kusala is good or better, or it is against it, because its meaning is changing, evolving. It is, you can't frame it, changing. So that is why I am fighting with you. You are self-contradicting. You use another term. I am sorry. I lost it. Otherwise, I would have hit you with your own ammunition.
Paradoxical. Wisdom is paradoxical in nature. So it's not necessarily self-contradicting, but it's more paradoxical.
No. You use
it's
the term.
It's a strange quality.
Better and contented. Knowledge is always pushing you till the end. There's no end also.
Yeah.
So you used another term, so that's I wanted to hit you with that term, but I forgot it.
Virtues?
No, virtues is for him. I don't care. Kusala has virtues.
It was virtuous meaning in terms of sila. Mm-hmm. Like somebody is, like, you know, if you're doing bad sila, you're in trouble. Like, it doesn't, you know, whatever you think about it, but it's not helpful.
Bad sila, no problem if you are alone. If you are only, it becomes bad if you are living in a society. The society is the sila. Then if you go to the one-man army, no good, no bad. No one is deciding, unless otherwise you are a fool.
Yeah, but that's almost like, by definition, if you're alone, you don't have encounters, so therefore sila isn't active. But it doesn't mean that sila doesn't exist. It's like a defilement.
No, yes.
It's just waiting for you to come out of your...
den.
Yeah, your lair. And then it's there waiting for you like a suitcase. And you take it away with you, you know? So, you can't also mix up too much the word kusala from panya. And this is a path of panya. It's not a path of kusala. You understand? But kusala is the base. But this comes back to your question about, are we here to do better and do better all the time, and this is kusala? No, that's not the meaning of kusala. You have to understand, kusala is just wholesome and skillful and goodness and, you know, intrinsically good kind of stuff. But panya is what we're trying to develop, and panya is infinite. Yes, we can be more and more wise all the time, and, you know, the quality of what is good changes with that too, you know? You know, like silver is good and gold is good and platinum is good, you know, And it depends on the situation. Something is better than another in a different situation, but there is still good. Like, you can't just say it's not good. It's foolish. You know what I mean? Both are good. You know, we're just talking about better. This idea of better is ridiculous stuff.
Okay, on.
Swaminansa, lately a friend of mine from Zen has been asking me about karma. And
karma.
Yes, karma. And I had read a little bit about the Buddha's ideas of, or what his approach was about karma, and I felt like kusala. This reminds
kusala
me
karma.
Of kusala, because it seems like that's how we, our habits and our activities create our, change the way our world is. Like, our world is directed by our mind and our thinking and our speech and our actions. So if we change our speech and our actions, we're changing our karma. I'm thinking that was my kind of feeling about karma, and I just wondered how karma, if that's the right way to think about it, and if karma is part of kusala.
No, karma, you can put kusala karma, abhyapadaka, abhyakata karma. Three types: good karma, bad karma, in between karma. So good karma is always doing better. Bad karma is you are doing lowering. Abhyakata is no good, no bad. So people, kusala is going to take always is kusala karma, the akusala, not with respect to the akusala karma. So therefore we say try to be better. Always try to be better. That's the way of doing kusala karma. But knowingly, if you do bad thing, akusala karma. Kusala karma is a common term. Kusala, akusala come to the adjectives. And there are a lot of things in our life, no good, no bad. That part we are ignorant. That's why we are searching about. So we are already enlightened in the 80% or more, because we are doing something habitually. We don't care whether it's good or bad. These things never go to your memory. Never go to the history. Never make any karmic forces. But therefore, always highlighting kusala karma, keep an account, be alert, be diligent, and do better. Otherwise, akusala can happen. So therefore, to suppress the akusala karma, keep you occupied always. Do this and that. And therefore, it's marketing. It's a dynamism. It's pushing. So people do not know, the people do not care about self-well-being. They don't care the karma. They don't care the kusala. They are just driven by the trend, driven by the social trends. And they don't care about the morality, because they are just for the self-esteem and the sensuous pleasure. But we are talking about some people, those who are concerned and responsible about their morality. They have to have kusala karma, kusala karma. So that is the atheists are telling, whenever you introduce kusala karma, akusala karma, you are morally responsible. If you don't care about the karma, you are morally irresponsible. That means emotional illiterate. So emotionally literacy means that you know. You have to be responsible, because you are living in a society. You are living with trees and plants. So you can't say, I don't care. But others will care. So therefore, social emotion or emotional literacy came after the World Bank attack. So we have to understand, his wrong thinking is my fault. His correcting is my benefit. So when we get together, if we are having the same restraint and doing better, I mean, society is enlightened then. Individually, you are not enlightened. You have to fight. So by today, you see, even in the Olympic Games, they are fighting each other. Olympic prepared for the peace. A United Nation is biased. NATO is biased. So people know these are international jokes. There are standards. But they are biased. They will say kusala is this and kusala, kusala is that. That is for their advertisement. But we are practicing people. We are practicing with our self-well-being as our norm. without disturbing the others' well-being. So we have authentic power to define our terms. Because whenever the commentators they are writing, the Buddhism completely disappeared, it became only a literal fact. They were not practicing, but they were grammatically writing. I mean, it's good, it's a colossal knowledge. But I don't compare myself with the commentators. We are practicing people 40 years in the forest. We are daily sitting. So I don't care that I take whatever the commentator says. And says even where the people always wanted to lodge a fight, level a case against me about Venerable Jnanananda. He says, don't misuse Venerable Jnanananda's saying. Then I told, who are you? I know him better than you as a layperson. I have my rights, but when he was, we'll say, one day Buddha Rakita died, I can say Buddha Rakita is that, which we have intimate relationship. They, you don't have. So how can you say that I must be related to Buddha Rakita like that? We are already related. So present day, our life is so precious. That's why I'm happy with the Bhikkhu Bodhi, is interpreting with as a Bhikkhu. Before Pali text societies, utterly lay people. I mean, they did a big job. But Bhikkhu Bodhi, Achan Jeff, and if we are writing, we'll be better. But we are unskilled in writing. So therefore, my interpretation, I don't share with others. I say this is my view because I am practicing. Even mistakes I am doing, you are witnessing me. I am witnessing you. It is not with the fine faulting system. Mm-hmm. But we can share. That is why we are calling for this kind of a discussion. So therefore, whether you like it or not, you are doing karma. Mm-hmm. And make it as much as possible. No kusala, no kapunya. And then you are better. You are carbon neutral. Lesser amount of oxygen you are using. Carbon neutral system. Because human beings are naturally carbon neutral. With a kusala kamma or akusala kamma. So I collected once all the papers published in the papers, made a paper articles book, kusala and akusala, because the Sri Lankan devotees are quite worried about the panya papa, kusala akusala. Venerable Jnanananda told both are the same. But I find the shades of meaning. The kusala is always pushing you, always marketing, always keep you, as you mentioned, that I'm poisoning you. Don't be happy with present moment. Go ahead. But sometimes, most of the time, Buddha says, be happy and be contented. But he says, appativani, don't look behind, look forward. Asantutti, don't be happy. Because something you have, something to achieve. So therefore, always keep the kusala as your target. But it is also moving. Your target of... Understand? Your target is moving. Kusala is such. So whenever you are fitting the target as, you are ever unsatisfactory, which you know. It is, all the other targets are fixed. Kusala is not fixed. So therefore, Jnanananda is the one who introduced this good and better. As he mentioned, silver, gold and platinum, good. But we have a hierarchy, and that is the advertisement. So, I mean, we are the kings. We are the one to tell someone because we are practicing.
Yeah, but I think sometimes we mix up this idea in Kusala about better. It's like saying it just floats. You know, it's like oil floats on water. It's just the nature of Kusala. Like if you have Kusala, that it floats. You know, that's just its property. You know, we find that very hard in English to understand that something has a property. You know, like wisdom is bright and shiny. You know, like evil is dark. You know, there are kind of qualities to things. So Kusala naturally floats. It naturally lifts. And
uplifting.
Yeah, it's uplifting. It's beneficial. It uplifts. That's its qualities. It's like saying, you know, gold is naturally it is something that we can purify. Other elements we can't purify. It's very difficult, but gold is easier to purify. It has that quality of being pure. And and it's beneficial and it has good properties and so on. So the same with kusala, that it's just its quality. You know, you can't just say, oh, it's better. Like, no, it's just the quality of it to lift, uplift you in samsara. If you have kusala in samsara, it lifts you up. It's like a life jacket. It will keep bringing you to beneficial things. Fine. But it doesn't get you out of samsara. But that's the problem. It's wisdom that gets you out of samsara. So if you have more kusala than somebody else, you know, that other person can get out of samsara if they have panya. So in a sense, okay, maybe panya is the highest kusala. Okay, but you have to understand, like, this is coming back to this toxic idea of better. Like, it's a one that just that's very dangerous in the practice, you know. That's a one that I see all the time. Westerners want to do better, be better, blah 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 every day, and it'll kill you. It'll very quickly wrap. It's a very like a vine. It'll grow around your throat and eventually strangle you. Because you'll have the thought one day, this isn't good enough. And all of your hard work over the many years in the practice will be just thrown out the door. Because it wasn't enough, you know? And you get fatigued and tired. And it's not enough, you know? So, anyway, that's some ideas.
Thank you. I think this ties into something that... I just wanted to mention is this kind of in the West about this idea of always one-upping somebody.
One-upmanship.
Yeah. And how this creates complaining, judging, and criticizing. And I think part of the beauty of living in this environment is living in the company of inspiring and aspiring individuals to make something of this life before we return to the elements, at least the physical. So I know that Bhante had mentioned before in a prior talk the importance of reflective speech versus restless speech. And I know when we had talked on a side note that you had mentioned the importance of kind of purpose. You always turn back and look at the reflection on the purpose of the speech. And I think this can be very, very, very skillful. One of the things that I humbly fail every day at, but I was reminded this morning was, you know, just kind of checking my mind in once I finish a conversation with an individual and see, you know, kind of the mental state to just check in. And so I was wondering if you have anything to add about how to engage in reflective speech.
In the Dasadhamma Sutta, we are chanting once in the day. Katam bhutasame rattindiva viti patanti iti abhinna pabhijitena abhinna pachavekitabha. How can I, my mind is working. What are the mind street, the chain, the consciousness happen, you also reflect it. So that means you always try to see the better. So you are a monk, you are living on others. That as you mentioned that if you are comparing with others, it's a poison. But if you are comparing within, it's a dynamic. So always pushing. And you will nowhere, never at rest. Even at the 80s, Buddha was dynamic. And some people say, when compared with the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first sutta, and the last one is the Parinibbana Sutta, improvements are there. Even after the fully enlightened, at the beginning he talked just philosophy in the Dhammacakka. But to go to the Parinirvana Sutta, he's talking very trivial things. How one after the other 37 factors of enlightenment and the very practical. That we say encountering some refinement can happen. That is within the Buddha, but it is directly related to the Dhamma. It is related to the Sangha. It is directly to the Sila. So therefore, if you are comparing with, if we two come together, we are fighting, no problem. But that fighting is helping me. Refining me, and I'm thinking that first time I saw the Buddha Rakita. Second time after 1 year, 10 years, what kind of a thing? Leave aside him, but our encounter have that improvement. But we are no personal kind of thing. We are fighting in the stage as well as in the room, no problem. But that fighting is my dynamism. That I like it. So I, even the girls and the boys, I like those who are fighting and dynamic with me. So I provoke all the time. So when I was in the university, when we are in the our dormitories, I never allow anyone to sleep after the lunch. So one day, it happened me to, so everyone pushed me and put into the bucket of, in the huge water, this thing. Because they are not allowing me to just rest, which is something wrong. Everyone got together and pulled me from the bed, put into the swimming pool, I think. They know I am something, some nerves are very over-dynamic. And the Buddha says, before the death, you must achieve something. Otherwise, at the deathbed, people will come and ask, what the hell you did after becoming a monk and everything. Till that, don't tell. The last minute when you are telling, ultimately, you have to die very disappointed way. And they, at one time, related to that, Dasadhamma Sutta, he says, Sunyagate abhiramameti abhinam pachavikitabha. I must understand, I always appreciate solitude life. But if you are telling someone, Buddha says, bragging, you are defeated. In the Upasampada Malaka, they says, if you are claiming, I don't like social life and you, I don't like you, I am like you people, I am a only solitude person, Buddha says, is bragging. So it's the same thing, the solitude within yourself, you have always remembered. But if you are bragging in other people, I mean the society at large, that is wrong advertisement, that's poisonous. So that is why I selected the monk's life. In the dynamic life, I have no question. I am a fully dynamic leader and always creative. No end. But I just want to resist this to earning for other people, earning for money, whatever, putting them into the yourself. Not a single, even my mother can't understand, my parents can't understand, the company can't understand why I am going for forest. They say you are very selfish. You try to be enlightened yourself. Then I told, I am not like that, but if you are coming with me to the forest, I will care with you. But if you like this one, I don't care. So therefore, internalizing kusala, internalizing dynamism and kind of thing, I find Upanishad's characteristic nature or his role model. He don't ask any people to come and meditate. But if he comes, he says, sit, stand up, everything is repeated, but you are the person going there. Yesterday one person asked in the down, Bhante, what is the meaning of sitting meditation? What is the meaning of walking meditation? Then I wanted to ask the person, why did you come here? Lucky enough, he never got up. Then I told, I am not answering you. But if you are asking me, what is the meaning of sitting and walking, why? Who asked you to come here? No, you must understand, justify why you are coming here. And then you must understand the package. But if I am telling you must come, you must sit, then it's a commandment. Buddha's, these things are not commandments. They're proposals. So we got here as a proposal. So I am not telling, if you are not coming, I am going to punish you. If you are coming, I am going to give a benefit. No. So therefore, internalization, I take AI subject, artificial intelligence. He likes it. I don't like it. Because artificial intelligence, no internalization. Never. Always commercial, always money-making. It's a cancer. It's a growing thing. You can't stop it. Whether I like it or not, I am using it. I use it as a slave. I never put salute and say, oh, you are a good man. No, I say, you are a bloody shit. Get out. Artificial intelligence can't get out. It is a servant. And the way the Buddha put it, into internalization, it says all bad things. I am telling again, all bad things. Once internalized, it's good. You know the art of insight meditation, internalization. Then you can see Hindu masters, their externalization. All cheating themselves. They are showing off. Buddha says, Kinte that I do meda, Kinte adhina satya, abbantarante ganam, bahiram parima. They are putting a big turban and this thing and kind of thing. But internally you are filthy. What is it? Not necessary, but if you are pure, you know, internally. So therefore, no poisonous. It is not poisonous. It is not advertising. It is, of course, marketing, advertising is a good tricky words. But if you are using yourself, no one can blame. So, abhinnam pachavikitabhang katambhutasame ratindiva vichipatantiti in Dasadhamma Sutta. Once in 10 days we are reciting this sutta. Always you must have a book, bookkeeping. How is my mind and then words, ideas. You people are witnessing. Sorry, I am attacking Buddharakita Hamadro, but you all are not coming. I am, we two only fighting often.
It was a little different for me when I was there. When Mahatero was there, he was establishing. He had just moved to
city center, to the forest center.
His own city center, and he was establishing his forest center. And when I came was 10 years later, so it was quite established, and it was like a factory. The city was like a factory, and the forest was like a factory. And also, you know, I personally was kind of like, I was kind of afraid of Upandita. You know, he's very imperial, you know, like he's really like an emperor. And so I didn't go and hang out with him, you know, and he didn't have that relationship. And actually, he didn't have that relationship with any of the monks. There was no monks close to him. He just had nuns all around him.
Distance.
And these were all like very capable nuns, very bright, and you know, like you never got near him. And then he had one or two young Nepalese like samaneras, and again they're really brilliant and talented. So he kind of I dealt with him in very, very formal ways. You know, like I might see him at the start of a retreat, and I'd see, you know, offer formal respects leaving. But at the same time, he was incredibly important to me, you know. And, you know, he was very supportive. Like, he was a guy who'd kick you out if you weren't doing work. He had this kind of motto, like, no idle workers, you know. So everybody was paranoid, like... that you weren't doing enough. Like this is the idea of better. And he had to do this because the Burmese people are quite sluggish in the practice. They think it's kuthala just to be in the center and you do nothing. Whereas I was like self-torturing. I was just like working and working and working because I was a workaholic. So it was like, you know, I was burning out and doing too much and trying too hard and up all day and all night and not sleeping enough. And, you know, I would be the first in and last out. And I was sick. And you know, I was like that for 2 years. Like, you know, really like fierce in the practice. And, you know, so, you know, in the end, but I had a great faith in him. Anything he said to me, if he said jump off a cliff, I'd jump off a cliff. You know, it was just like, okay, Upandita said jump off a cliff, I'm going. That's it. You know, so in the end he said, you know, I needed to take a break. And I said, okay. And I was gone like 2 hours later, you know. No question. He had just, it was like, emperor has given the command and I'm the little foot soldier. And out the door I was gone. Like that was how he was for me, you know. And but it was really strange when he died. The day I heard that he died, it was like an explosion in my chest. You know, there was something very, he was very, very important to me. And on the other hand, like coming back to this idea of better, I made a lot of progress under Upandita. Like under him, meaning like Usasana, who was his lieutenant. You know, and Usasana is a big, famous monk. You know, when you say lieutenant, it's like, I forget who the lieutenant was for Napoleon. Like, he was a great guy too, you know, or, you know, whoever the famous people are. Like, when you say lieutenant, it's, you know, he was, Usasana is still...
Lieutenant.
lieutenant. Like, you know, he's the captain and the lieutenant is the next down in the command.
Is a post or a proper name?
Yeah, it's like a designation.
Ah, like lieutenant.
Lieutenant.
Ah, lieutenant.
Americans say lieutenant.
Huh? Is
it? General.
General. We call lieutenant. Yeah, general is the commander working under the emperor.
Yeah. So anyway, he was his lieutenant. He was the person
implementing everything.
Implementing things. Yes, he was the meditation teacher that I would report.
Nayaka Sayadaw, we call.
And then I also had I had Tamanijo.
Tamanijo. Dhammika is Tamanijo. His pen name is Tamanijo.
Yeah.
He's Dhammika.
What's his name?
Dhammika.
No, he's not Dhammika.
Tamanijo and Dhammika are the same. The Thayadaw's writer.
It's his pen name, but he's not Dhammika.
Dhammika.
Anyway, Tamanijo is a special title. It's an exam you do when you're 13 as a Samanera in Burma. So you're the first in the country. Basically, these guys are geniuses.
They're coming from Nepal, learning Pali, learning Burmese, and writing in Burmese, become the first in the country.
Tamanijo was a Burmese man.
No, he's teaching. He's the teacher.
But he's the teacher of the Nepalese. If you know Nepalese, like the Buddha was Nepalese, like Nepalese are very arrogant. Like they are, nobody can train them. Nobody can teach them unless you are the best. You know what I mean? Like they're contemptuous. They have a contempt. They're funny people. Like I never had that before where like somebody like you, like, you know, French have a little reputation for being a little, but they're nothing compared to the Nepalese. Nepalese really are another level.
Ma Vimala is now Saido's the daughter.
Oh my gosh, yeah. These are like, I mean, you have to think about Star Wars or something. Like, it's more like in this universe, like, of like, you know, very strange people, like, in a way, in a wonderful way, like, really.
I mean, they are filtering in such a way, take the best and giving the best treatment through Tamanijo. Yeah. Ultimately, predictable, they will be the best in the country.
Yeah. And then Upandita would all of the Burmese would come in, maybe to do merit or something like that, you know, like especially Katana. And he would scold them about how inferior they were compared to these Nepalese. Like, you see this person speaks 10 languages and you can't even speak Myanmar properly. Look how well they speak Myanmar. It would be just, he could whack him and whack him and whack him. Like, that's why I mean he was an emperor. He was just like, he was ferocious. So I was quite afraid of him, really, you know. And I was used to, you know, I was used to working with IIT and Stanford and MIT. And I didn't mind those guys, but Upandita was just another totally different level. Like, and if you were reporting to him, he was very weird. He'd have he had this like a roller dexer, you know, like a pivoting kind of bookcase. So he would pivot around and he was reading like six books at the same time he was interviewing me. And you'd be like, is he listening to me or not? And he would be telling these Nepalese to do something. You know, it was like an orchestra and all these people running in and out. And any slight deviation in your meditation and your reporting, he'd nail you.
No, the five, shoot you at on the spot.
On the spot, yeah. And I had some good interviews with him where normally he's the only person that I found that I've ever interviewed with who he had a mind like my own. Like, I'm very curious. Like, he would ask indirect questions. Like, I'm not a person that you say, tell me what happened, and then next, and then next. I like to figure it out for myself. Like he, with a lot of people, like, you kind of have to tell them, lead them forward. Whereas I like to find my own way forward. And he was very intuitive, and he knew that. And then he would also be asking questions, like more like an inquiry, and like he was interested in my practice. So he had this way of when he interviewed you, that he taught you how to interview yourself. You see, most other interviewers are like, you tell them and they'll say yeah, okay, or not. But he taught you how to interview yourself. So then you could kind of move off, and you didn't need him again if you knew what you were doing, you know? And I often think back to my discussions with him. Like, he was ferociously curious, like with regards to my practice, and we failed to be curious about ourselves. You see, that's where inquiry, the nature of inquiry, is that you actually like yourself and you're interested in yourself and you're interested, oh, why did I make that mistake? You see? So he was like that, like, that was very curious, that's very interesting. You know, he was interested in me, and he taught me to be interested in myself and in my own practice. And he taught, you could also get this sieving. He would sieve out, that's useful and that's not useful. And he did it in a way that was like he'd go, that's interesting. And he'd kind of go, why are you interested in that? You know what I mean? Like, if it wasn't interesting, it was like, why are you interested in that? And, you know, he'd point you towards interesting things in the practice. And, but he was constrained while I was there. You see, he had given away all of his best monks. You know, because everybody wanted Upandita trained disciples. So it was quite weak in structure, the whole place. Like, he was running an empire, but he didn't have the command, you know, between him and the yogis. Like, we had this opportunity of these exceptional lieutenants at occasions, but day in, day out, it was Burmese monks who had completed their Dhammacharya, they had completed certain exams, and they would come in, they would practice for 4 months, and then they would apply to be a teacher, and then they would be meta teacher, and they just didn't have the experience, especially to deal with people who had more experience than they had themselves, you see, and especially in a different culture. They were very enculturated. Upandita had a mind that I had worked with some of the brightest people ever, you know, and he was far beyond them. He was astonishing. Like, I mentioned last night to Damodiva about Elon Musk, and Elon Musk is somebody I perceive to be quite savant. He is just you don't know how smart people are. Maybe the same with some people you've met. But Upandita was, I don't know, he was just freaky. He was freaky. it was weird, you know, if you were around him. He was a very weird guy in a good way. I mean, like, he was just like, you know, it was like, we're not worthy.
Coming from the practice, or was it something natural?
Oh, naturally, yeah.
No. From karma?
One day he told, we had an encounter that I just wanted to leave him. And I wanted to come here. I was so desperate. And then he told, get out, no problem. And then he told, what are you going to do by being in Nishanavani again? Then I told, I will be trapped in here to teach others. You, half-boiled yam, going to teach others? It's completely sarcastic. Then I told, I asked him, then what are you suggesting? No, you are too old. You can't learn now. So at least you have to be here 1 year. And so he never invited me to be here. He told, you have to be. Yeah, all of a sudden, he stopped. Then, do you know, this is not the way of my way of life. This is the best for the sasana. I do it, but I am a very free person. But this is the best role model. Can you also do that? So I feel so awful. I told sadhu, sadhu. Then this is your place. Door is open. Take yourself on time. So the Burmese monks never get that kind of interviews. Such a distance. We being foreigners, they are envious. We say, he afraid. I am always making Sayadaw angry. Always make funny. It's so systematic, I completely miss. But I am 3 times dynamic. So therefore, he likes me. And he told, that he can do work of three people, you have to follow him. But unlucky enough, he's going to go back to Sri Lanka. There he told, this is not my way of life. But he thinks this is the best for the sasana. So he is a role model. And as he mentioned, he's an emperor. He knows. And he's behaved like that and exemplifying how was the Buddha disciple. And always asking us to follow him. I didn't know. I am a completely different person. One day I went there, he told, Dhammaji, I wanted to offer you a bowl. Are you going to use it? I told, I am not using. Then I am not going to give. I am going to give you three robes. Are you going to use it? Yeah, that will be a gift because then remove everything, wear it now. So I went to the corner. You have to determine first. Relinquish this thing. Okay, thank you. I offered the full Atapitika. You know Atapitika? The eight things we have a monk. Openly, and the bowl is rusted. This is the way you are treating teacher. Then I told, we are not opening it and say, no, it is not done. It's a practical thing. Atapitika is, the bowl is rusted. So other people just keep it there, but open it. So I know the art, but that is the role model. I mean, we can't do it. So disciplined, but whenever he is free, 2-3 times I make a complete joker. I just crack jokes. So he is looking up and down to see, because only we two are in the room. So I make him completely like the young boy with the grandparents. So sometimes I say, I don't understand what you are telling. I am not a Burmese. Then he is lost. So I had a few occasions within the 4 years, and he knows I am a rascal. I'm a disobedient, but he loved me, the nature. But he tried to satisfy him because he is a disciplinable man. I am not such. But I had a long way, and everyone knew I had a relationship with the sadhu. But he never considered myself as a family member because I am unpredictable. And the Burmese, the Nepalese girls, the way they have trained, the king is having the resort at the damsels or something like that. How do you call it? Escort? No.
Concubine.
Exactly. So they are afraid of me.
It's like from the imperial palace.
The
forbidden city in China. This is like, these are not ordinary concubines. These are ones that they look down on you.
So it's nice, but when he's dying, I expected him. Because it was almost 90 odd number of years.
94.
So I thought that there's a huge gap. No one can fulfill it. Okay, today no chance for the opening the book. Sorry for Venerable the Buddharakita. But anyway, we contributed with our dynamic discussion. Thank you very much for the participation.